Pro Football Weekly Podcast is back, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us. I am your co-host, Arthur Arkish, alongside Eric Edholm. We are taping remotely this week, so we're not in the same room. We're going to try and make sure we remain conversational, cut each other off a little bit. Eric, why don't you jump in now and tell the listeners how we're doing today.
I don't think we're doing very well. We had to be separated, Arthur and I did. I just want to give people the backstory here. We're not doing well personally. We have it was a scheduling issue, folks. That's why we're doing it remotely. So, yeah, we're happy to be here. We got three more football games in the season. It's kind of crazy. And I don't know. I guess I'm just ready to find out how bad this, this Tom Brady injury is.
Yeah, well, we obviously aren't going to get a lot of details from Bill Belichick. He did meet with the media. We're taping here on Friday, and Eric just posted a piece at ProFootballWeekly.com with an update. It's honestly sort of a non-update because this is the Patriots after all. But, Eric, I guess maybe the best question, and we should just, in case the listeners haven't heard, in case they're living under a rock, Tom Brady was in a friendly fire collision midweek practice and injured his throwing hand, apparently jammed it pretty good. There have been pictures that show some swelling. He is wearing a glove in practice. Well, he didn't practice Thursday, but I guess was spotted in warmups wearing a glove on his right hand, which he normally does not like to do. Eric, just what's been your experience, or what do you recall from Brady trying to play through injuries in the past? Is that maybe that's kind of a good way to look at this and how he may be able to handle this one?
Yeah, he's obviously had a lot of stuff that has limited him in the past, and you know, going back really to his second season, I'm forgetting what the injury was at the time, but I remember it was really troublesome as the Patriots had one of their few bad seasons in the past 18 years. But, you know, more recently, obviously, the ACL cost them the entire 2008 season minus a handful of snaps against the Chiefs. But, yeah, I mean, he's had little things here and there. What's funny is that when I first heard about the injury, it made me think a couple games ago how he'd been kind of flexing his hand a little bit. So I'm assuming that he had a little bit of discomfort before then.
Right.
Just given the way he was sort of, you know, awkwardly flexing his hand during games a little. But, you know, that's to be expected or whatever. I don't know exactly how bad this is. You know, people are really kind of thinking it's a minor deal, but something, as you said, the swelling can cause a little discomfort, might hurt his grip a little bit, might cause a little loss of velocity when he tries to rip it. So, you know, that all factors in, but this is still Tom Brady and it's still the AFC Championship game. They've been here 7 years in a row. I think he'll be mentally fine, and then physically we'll have to find out what limitations there might be.
Yeah, I think we can safely call Brady a gamer. He's probably going to go in this one. Decent quarterback. And coming from two non-quarterbacks, I'd have to guess, Eric, that an injury to your throwing hand could potentially cause some complications, kind of some of which you just named. And Brady obviously gets by more with his smarts and his accuracy and his experience than really just great arm talent at this stage of his career, though obviously it's still not an issue. So it's going to be fascinating. It'll be kind of another angle here, and there will be plenty of them. The Patriots and Jaguars kick off first, I believe, Sunday afternoon, and then the Vikings and Eagles take us home. So before we kind of dive into those games a little bit more and some of the matchups that are really going to matter, another interesting story, Eric. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported Friday morning that Le'Veon Bell was basically a no-show at the team's final walkthrough last weekend, showed up for the final 5 minutes, and was late on game day. No, he didn't show up at 12:05, obviously, but Mike Tomlin likes his players there at least 2 hours before kickoff. Bell did not comply with that. Just kind of your thoughts on where this thing may go next. The Steelers have kind of been swirling in drama all season and obviously made it all the way to the divisional round, but it seems like a week didn't go by all year that we weren't talking about some kind of on or off-field distraction involving Mike Tomlin's club.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that last part, especially. And you know, everybody kind of knew they were headed towards a flashpoint with Bell, given that, you know, he didn't report until he absolutely had to this past year, September 1st. That yep. He was a franchise tag recipient who played, you know, under a very good salary this year, but clearly wants that long-term security in a position that often doesn't receive long-term security. Running backs are kind of viewed, even for somebody as special as Bell, as replaceable, or you know, they have a short shelf life. What used to be 30 years old was the kind of cutoff for backs. Now some people say it's 28. So you know, Bell obviously is creeping up on that with a heavy workload going back to his days at Michigan State. You have to feel like this is headed towards maybe a different result than what we thought before. There was still a feeling at some point this year that a long-term deal might be reached, but as the season went on, and really as his workload increased, and then this latest incident where he apparently shows up 5 minutes before the walkthrough is over on Saturday, gets there some point during the 2 hours up to game day, which is, like you said earlier, than Tomlin wanted. But the Steelers may just say, look, we're not going to pay 120% over $12-plus million, so close to $15 million if year 14 and a half or whatever, for somebody who's not on board. So I have a feeling that they could maybe franchise him and try to trade him for whatever they could get. But, you know, then they just kind of delay this thing longer. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how they handle it. But I lean towards them kind of letting him walk.
Yeah, we're both in agreement on that. Talked about it right before we started taping. He's going to be 26 years old. He has had the Steelers have kind of rode him the past 2 years, or at least from two Decembers ago on, like a guy they didn't really intend not having in the long-term equation just because he's been the busiest back in the NFL and it hasn't even been particularly close. Now, he's obviously withstood the rigors and had another all-pro season. I don't think anyone questions his ability, Eric. I mean, he's a top three running back, if not the best one or two in the NFL. So that's not really what's in question here, but it was a complicated negotiation period, or at least decision with the tag, even last offseason, because it's easy to forget. This guy's had a couple suspensions, one more slip-up, and could potentially not be available for the team for an extended period of time. So, I don't think John Connor, great story, obviously, may turn into a great back, but I don't really know that he would have to be – I don't think he could kind of be viewed as the heir apparent to Le'Veon Bell, per se. But as you said, or as everyone knows at this point, teams are finding backs all over the place, and it'll be interesting to see what happens here. And obviously some other changes going on with the Steelers and not renewing Todd Haley's contract and promoting the quarterback's coach. And it's easy to forget that it was the defense, Eric, that let up 45 points, and Keith Butler's still sitting pretty there, I guess. And I don't know. It would seem to me they need a lot of upgrades on that side of the ball, starting with finding a replacement for Ryan Shazier.
Yeah, no, I mean, I absolutely am fascinated to see what direction they go, because obviously Ben Roethlisberger said he's going to be back, but you have to think about the future there and whether Joshua Dobbs, like James Conner, is the heir apparent to Roethlisberger, like Conner would be to Bell. I don't think those are answers in and of themselves. So you obviously have to plan for the future, and we'll see. I mean, does Bell have a market as a team like, the Dolphins or the Lions? He's spent some time in Michigan or the Buccaneers or the Giants or the Oakland Raiders. I don't know. I mean, is there a team out there that could use his services? Absolutely. Is there a team that's willing to commit to him, a guy who's been suspended in the past, who now has, some disciplinary concerns as well, even if they are directly related to his contract? That's not exactly handling your business the best way as you head into the free agent market. So we'll see. I mean, I suspect the Steelers have some ideas about how they replace them. And it's another deep draft for running backs. So it's not as if they can't find a solution somewhere, whether it's the draft, free agency, or what have you.
Yeah, good call. And obviously, Kevin Colbert finds the mid-round wide receiver gems. No reason to think. Le'Veon Bell, obviously, a former second rounder. No reason to think he can't find another special one. But let's be very clear here. A, we're not predicting the demise of the Steelers. At least I am not. They're still a great and stable organization, and I expect them to remain in this thing for the next few years, very likely. And then I'm also not saying that they're going to just, you can't really replace Le'Veon Bell's talent, but sometimes you have to move on. Eric, you did make one more interesting point before we get into conference title game weekend. I hadn't really thought about the tag and trade possibility, and it is an interesting one to try and ensure that the Steelers would receive some type of compensation. But I would have to guess that in the end here, they may do just as well by getting the top compensatory pick by letting him walk rather than kind of doing the tag and trade, because wouldn't that sort of that starts to lay out the blueprint for what a minimum of what his next contract looks like. And I would imagine that the next team he would eventually end up on would want to be the ones responsible for doing that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I do what you're saying. Yeah, obviously it would come down to whether the Steelers were fine receiving a third round pick, let's say the 97th pick in the 2019 draft, versus maybe a high fourth round pick this year or a low third round. I don't think they would get much for him, just because, like with Jimmy Garoppolo, the trade to San Francisco, you're trading a guy with an expiring contract, and one who has his contract demands were exceptionally high last year. He wanted to be paid not only as the top running back, but to tack on a salary that made him a top 12 wide receiver. I mean, that is exceptionally high money right there. So, you know, it would break the bank for that position. And there would have to be a team that has a little bit of desperation, a little bit of a need in the backfield, and also ample cap room. So, you know, those things all have to be weighed. They could also put the tag on him if there isn't a market. They rescind it, much like Carolina did with Josh Norman. It doesn't happen often, but it could happen. So sure. Obviously all options would be on the table, I think.
Yeah, it'll be a fascinating situation to follow. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Le'Veon Bell got bad advice in turning down that reported $12 million average salary with $30 million guaranteed. That's just unheard of for running backs, and I have a hard time seeing how he's going to match that. Now, of course, he did end up collecting $12 million under the tag this past season before they even got the long-term deal done. And again, he's only 26, despite the fact he's been in the league now for a handful of years. So, all right, you mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo, Eric. Maybe that's a decent segue to try and get us into championship weekend. Is it sort of cruel irony here or fitting in any way that that Brady's dealing with this injury and it could potentially, I don't think it's going to be, but I kind of jokingly tweeted the other night, well, at least they have it's Brian Hoyer. It would be kind of just an interesting next step in this sort of season-long saga, right?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. I mean, the Garoppolo trade happened on Halloween and everybody said, wait, is this legit? Is this happening? Is this real? The story then got churned through the mill one more time when this report from ESPN came out about all the strife happening in Foxborough, and that was sort of a key element of the story. And now it's being brought up again a few weeks later. So, yeah, we're going to – I have a feeling this thing will on some level never die. You know, obviously Garoppolo has to play well and all that, but it's come back full circle. And if Brady is limited, or God forbid they do have to go to Hoyer, you know, that there's no question all the armchair quarterbacks are going to come out Monday morning and say, see, I told you so. This was a bad idea, and here's the Patriots paying for it.
Yeah, just fascinating that the backup quarterback that potentially looms larger in this matchup is Brian Hoyer and not Chad Henne, if we think about where we were in August and heading into the season. But
it's the season of the backup quarterback, man. We've got, you know, Case Keenum against Nick Foles in the NFC side. We've got this Garoppolo story, and, you know, Henne was reportedly very close to being named Bortles' replacement as we were sort of looming in the final play, preseason game, rather. Right. It's crazy how this stuff is all kind of coming full circle.
Does anything change in your estimation about sort of a philosophy of either fielding the quarterback position or the backup quarterback position? I still sort of – I mean, I view Case Keenum very much as the exception to the rule, and that still by definition a backup is a guy that a team may look to get them through a small, you know, stint of games and not someone that you're going to expect to still lead you into the title game. But has your opinion kind of changed about backup QBs? I mean, gosh, there's not 32 good ones. Much less 64.
Yeah, I mean, always have a plan B, I think, is in the Vikings case, they had to have a plan C, too, because of the Teddy Bridgewater injury and what happened to Sam Bradford eventually. So credit to them for having, and really they had a plan D, too, when they signed Kyle Sloter. I know people don't really know much about him and whether he could play or not, but he had a good preseason with the Broncos. They snap him up, and, you know, it's just that extra layer of insurance. So, yeah, do I all of a sudden think teams are going to go on the cheap and not take quarterbacks at the top of round one, or, you know, not be willing to pay them the money they deserve? No, that narrative will go away as soon as Matt Ryan receives his extension, you know, as soon as other quarterbacks are taken care of, as soon as we see the money Garoppolo will get this offseason, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, we'll kind of forget about that. But, yeah, it brings up an interesting point of, hey, just because a guy like Keenum wasn't able to succeed in a couple other places doesn't mean that, you know, he can't be groomed for some kind of role, and, you know, obviously he's taking the reins and run with it.
It's a great point, too, about Kyle Sloter. He's easy to forget about, but I think, Eric, the Vikings have had to keep him on their active roster all season to protect him. Isn't that right?
I believe so, unless he now you have me thinking. I'm not 100%. Did he end up on IR or something like that? I'll check as you're talking here, but yeah.
Yeah, it's really neither here nor there, but I just it's kind of another sort of funny point A to point B, because now here the Broncos are desperate at quarterback, obviously, and the Vikings obviously think enough of Slaughter that they've they poached him off Denver's practice squad. I mean, I don't think it's really debatable. Minnesota has the best quarterback depth in the NFL this season. although I guess with injuries, maybe not, but if healthy, they have the best depth in that room. And just kind of funny to think about that side of it too. And we'll spend a couple minutes, Eric, at the end of the podcast, just talking Senior Bowl. Of course, the Broncos will be down there. We'll be down there scouting quarterbacks a little bit. So, but that is another interesting side of things. Let's stick with Jacksonville and New England for a minute and get away from the Brady hand injury. What's the big one or two storylines that you're watching in this one? How do the boisterous Jaguars keep this season going and make good on Jalen Ramsey's guarantee to get to the Super Bowl and win that bitch?
Yeah, and speaking of Ramsey, you know, there was some speculation that maybe he might be covering Rob Gronkowski. Now, Todd Washington, defensive coordinator, when asked about that, said, well, if this was basketball, I might do that. But we're playing football. We're playing our coverage. The Jaguars are almost stubborn with the way they play. I mean, they are similar in that way to, I think, the 2002 Bucks, the 2013 Seahawks. Kind of like, hey, we do what we do. Your job is to stop us. Uh-huh. And they're so good at what they do, and they're so athletically gifted. And you know, their starting lineup is maybe the best defense to a man in the NFL. So credit to them. They're able to get away with that. But in this case, you know, I might consider matching Ramsey up. If Telvin Smith or Barry Church or whoever else is asked to man up with Gronk and that assignment is not working, the Jaguars better be ready to switch. So that's the matchup that concerns me most on that side. For New England, it's going to be about setting that hard edge defensively and not allowing Leonard Fournette to bash his way into the second level. Because, you know, it's at times been an issue for them. And so I kind of worry a little bit about their ability to stop and bring population against the run for 60 minutes.
What was the key? Great points by you, and obviously Todd Wash overseeing the second defense, second rate defense in the NFL doesn't really need our advice. But I'm kind of with you, and I at least hope that he's not going to be rigid in game if Gronk is torching them. Because I saw the quote too, Eric. He said, "We're not looking to reinvent the wheel now. It's in line with what you just said. We do our defense, and we do it the best." But if ever there was a player in the NFL, Eric, that was worth reinventing the wheel for on the spot, I'd have to think it's Rob Gronkowski. And if ever there was a unique enough talent to do it with, it's probably Jalen Ramsey. So that'll be fascinating to see how things, you know, if that is, in fact, a fluid situation. But, yeah, I was a little disappointed. I think all of us as football fans to see that quote, because wouldn't Rob Gronkowski versus Jalen Ramsey, I mean, that pretty much equates to football porn, doesn't it?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, it would just – if anything, it would show us how good Ramsey is.
Right.
He is so and so physical, but he could also flip his hips and run as well as almost any corner in the league too, especially for that size. So yeah, in the past, teams like the Ravens with Jimmy Smith and there have been others. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who's done it and done it effectively. You know, the Titans put Logan Ryan on him at times last week, not every snap, but you know, cornerbacks have had some success against Gronkowski in the past. Now, there have been some that he's absolutely abused because he's so big and, you know, he can muscle him those first 5 yards off the line. So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, I'll be fascinated. Obviously, they have Miles Jack. They have Telvin Smith. They have a couple offense or outside linebackers, and those two who, boy, run as well as some safeties in the league, you know, run as well as any linebacker I could think of. So that may end up being a pretty good solution, like.
And then on your other matchup, I was last weekend, full disclosure, I was at a bachelor party in Scottsdale, and during the Titans-Patriots game, I was at some fancy sushi restaurant. It was awesome, awesome dinner, but I was not able to watch the game as closely as I wanted. Fortunately, I had Eric on the spot writing for PFW and watching closely, and I'm curious, what was the secret to the Patriots' success against Derrick Henry? Because I'm guessing it's one they're going to look to emulate now against Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, there was a run in the first, I don't know, 6-8 minutes of the game where Henry kind of got a little bottled up inside. Everything kind of get gummed up, and they were covering the A gaps, and New England was, you know, selling out to make sure that wasn't going to get going early in the game. Now they later switched their course defensively because they got in a lead. But at that point, you know, Henry tried to bounce it outside, and old man strength, James Harrison, just hogtied him with one arm. And, you know, I was impressed because even when New England is shorthanded up front, as they've been a lot of the season, or even when they've been lighter up front, where they try to go with a little more speed and a little less bulk, they've been effective at not letting those guys bounce it outside and create more problems for them defensively. So they were pretty disappointed outside of a handful of plays, and against the run, they were great. I don't think Henry had to run longer than 4 yards. So good job sealing off those gaps, not letting him make something that wasn't there, unlike the Chiefs the week before, who, I mean, I think Henry had 60% of his yards after first contact, and that just wasn't going to happen.
Right. And not just when Darrell Revis was pretty much stopping in his tracks to stay away from Leonard Fournette. But, Eric, we mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo and kind of the Monday morning quarterback angle there. And I got to just say, for a minute, the Steelers' defensive line doesn't get beat up very often, but the Jaguars' offensive line kind of whooped their ass a little bit last week. At least that was my take on it. And obviously having James Harrison there might have helped, but more to the point of spinning things for this week, what about that Jaguars' offense outside of Leonard Fournette, that line and Blake Bortles? I mean, do you think they can be up to the challenge again? Because I don't know, I think more of Pittsburgh's defensive front than I do New England's. I'm not sure about you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's, you know, a very good group. You've got some second and third round picks. Guys like A.J. Cann and Brandon Linders turned into a really nice center. And
yep.
Cam Robinson, the rookie, has held up well, and he's done his job remarkably well. I don't think he's as good a run blocker as he is a pass blocker, but still, it's been fun to watch him go out there and really, you know, unlike other young left tackles like Eric Flowers or guys who, you know, have become kind of the whipping boys for their respective teams, Robinson's done a quietly really nice job. So, you know, they have the old man tight end, Mercedes Lewis. He's become a good blocker over the years. And, you know, they can kind of go heavy. They use a fullback, Tommy Bohannon, who scored a touchdown last week. And, you know, he does some dirty work, too. So, yeah, there were no negative plays last week for the Steelers, at least not ones that the Jaguars, you know, they had a kneel down. But, yeah, that was something that the Steelers thrived on all season, 50-plus sacks, a lot of tackles for loss. They didn't get any done last week. So you're right. New England may decide, look, we're going to play more of a read and react style where we're not hell-bent rushing Blake Bortles all day, but we still want to hold our ground. And so that may be the way to neutralize the run without trying to go, you know, crazy against, you know, in terms of sacking Bortles and things like that.
I know Cam Robinson had some red flags off the field, but there must have been some serious skeletons in those closets that I'm still not aware of that allowed him to drop to whatever it was, 35, 36 overall, because, man, a first-round talent to be sure. And like you said, he has been pretty steady for the most part for them and a huge part of their success. So a great draft pick. It looks like a great draft when you go Fournette and Robinson and kind of redefine your identity there. This past April, obviously, it's paid huge dividends for the Jaguars. It's the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. He's Eric Edholm. I am Arthur Arkish. We've got a handful of minutes left. Certainly, we want to get to the later game, the Vikings going into Philadelphia, and then just spend a minute or two talking about the Senior Bowl at the end of our show. So I guess we'll dive right into the later game. And is there any concern, Eric, with the Vikings side of things, just kind of all the emotions that they've expended over the past week coming off that ridiculous finish? I wouldn't think so because Mike Zimmer's such a great coach, because he's got such a great staff, but I guess it's always at least worth wondering about when you have such a just an unbelievable finish as, you know, as Keenum to Diggs and all the hoopla that followed that.
Yeah, fair question, right? I mean, you can come out of that game feeling almost invincible or like you're a team of destiny or something, and all right, we're going to roll into Philly, you know, Nick Foles, who cares? Let's go in there and get the job done.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all of a sudden the Eagles' defense and run game and other elements are taking over, and you find yourself down. And the Vikings may not be that, you know, they're not ideally built to be coming back from large deficits, but they're off quite from head too. So we'll see. I don't know. Like you said, I'm pretty confident in this coaching staff, you know, and Pat Shurmur's been around the block, and Mike Zimmer's been around the block, and he's, you know, one of our favorite coaches this season and you know, before that as well. George Edwards, veteran defensive coordinator. You look up and down the staff, a lot of guys with skins on the wall. So I don't necessarily, you know, it's not like Case Keenum sitting back thinking, well, I've cashed in, everything's good. I'm, you know, if we lose, no big deal. I think there's a lot of motivation on that team where last year was such a grind after 5-0, and they just went in the tank after that point. Mike Zimmer's eye injury, everything they faced along the way. There's been a lot of adversity, and they know they have the chance to do something special with the Super Bowl coming to their hometown.
Sure. Yeah, great points there. Obviously, the chance to play and host in the Super Bowl would be the first team ever. And then, of course, Case Keenum. He's not playing with house money yet. I know it's been a special season, but he's auditioning for 32 teams still right now. And he's you know, he's close to a windfall, I would think, but not there yet. So great points. As far as that is concerned, what about the Eagles side of things? You know, pretty impressive performance. I loved actually what you said on our TV show this week. Why don't you tell the listeners how you sort of explain Foles' maybe uneven performance, but it certainly ended with a flourish.
Yeah, I just remembered as you said, I was thinking, what did I say? God, it must have been profound, but I couldn't actually remember it. Yeah,
I don't know about profound. It was clever.
I'm certain it wasn't profound, but yeah, I was watching. I actually kind of I fit my way through it a little bit. It wasn't exactly the way I said, but I was watching this new series on Netflix, and the first couple episodes, not so hot, but I'm glad I stuck with it because it ended up being pretty good in Mindhunter, if anyone's ever seen it. But same thing with Foles, right? The first 30 minutes were not that pretty, right? You looked last week, and boy, the Eagles were really lucky to be down 10-9. I mean, they should have been down two scores at that point with all the mistakes they made in the first half. Fumbles, you know, a muff punt, everything else. Foles getting away with an interception there at the end of the half that led to a field goal. You know, missed extra point, the whole bit. And then Foles all of a sudden, you know, rang two really good drives. One of them was, you know, he threw for 70 of the 74 yards. A lot of RPO stuff that really seemed to get the Falcons guessing and on their heels a little bit. So, you know, he rallied. So if he can get that going a little earlier in the game against this Vikings defense, you know, he's not Drew Brees. And Brees was, frankly, lucky to get away with what he got away with in the first half. But if Foles can kind of keep the score close, not make too many crucial errors early, he did get in a pretty good rhythm there that second half.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think Doug Peterson deserves credit, too. He's an in-game tinkerer, and I think he has a good feel for his quarterback and what adjustments he can make to get him in the comfort zone, and we saw a little bit more of that last week. Do you think maybe the matchup in this one for me, Eric, I think arguably is the Eagles' offensive line versus the Vikings' defensive front and their pass rush, and I think I say that because I think Foles is a little more judicious with the football than Case Keenum, and I think the numbers kind of bear that out. But at the same time, there's no question that he does not have the elusiveness. He does not have the creativity in the pocket. And I could see a situation where if Everson Griffin is beating Big V like a drum off the edge, or if Linval Joseph in that the double mug look is winning inside versus that really good interior, Foles could turn in. Not he won't be a deer in headlights, but he's just kind of a statuesque guy who can't escape pressure. I think that could turn out to be a big storyline in this one.
Yeah, the Eagles' guards at times this year have been a little shaky, you know, and that's where Linval Joseph and Tom Johnson and Shamar Stephen, I know you kind of pointed him out the other day, other guys who contributed up front, Jaleel Johnson, the rookie out of Iowa, got some snaps. So, yeah, that's a key matchup. But I think you absolutely nailed it with the Griffin-Bye-Tie matchup at left tackle, right defensive end. I mean, I just think that is going to be so crucial because, you know, credit to him for what he's done stepping in for Jason Peters. That's a tall, tall order, but quickness, right? I mean, that's what Griffin brings, and that's what Bye-Tie struggles with the most, so, or at least what I've seen. So
yep.
That right there, you've got to chip. You've got to give him help, I think, and got to not put him in those one-on-one isolation blocking matchups that just will, I think, absolutely favor the Vikings.
Yeah, we're in agreement on that. I mean, it is a couple nice aces in the hole to have all pros, obviously, in Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson. But, gosh, Linval Joseph and Danielle Hunter are handfuls, too. So an interesting matchup to watch there for sure. And just, you know, Zimmer's ability when he wants to kind of create confusion there with those blitz looks and backing people up and backing them off. Eric, you mentioned Shamar Stephan. I don't know if he'll play or not. I haven't seen the latest injury report, but he left early last week. He's been a good early down run stuffer. Tom Johnson, they're a really good sub rusher. And then Andrew Sendejo, I think Zimmer said he was going to be fine, but that was a scary hit, obviously, that knocked him out from Michael Thomas. So a couple guys to keep an eye on in the middle of that Vikings defense, too. I guess let's close with this, unless you have other matchups you want to get to, but what do you think about the Eagles secondary versus Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen? Because the Eagles have the best run defense in football, and while I have a lot of respect for Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon and what they've done this season, I kind of feel like it could come down to Keenum's right arm and those two wide receivers who were so good late last week.
Right. You know, we saw Treadwell make a play. We know Jairus Wright can play, you know, here and there, make a catch. But really, it is those two guys. I did not think Thielen would have. He didn't have gaudy numbers, of course, but he made some really super competitive plays against Marcus Lattimore, and that was a big win for the Vikings. Anything they got in that matchup was going to be gravy. It helps, you know. They got him back in that game, and you know, gave them a chance to win it. And not back in that game, obviously. They took a big lead, and then kind of had to kind of hold water at the end there. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of the Eagles corners. Really, their whole secondary has given me a little bit of pause this year. A couple of physical and smart safeties, McLeod and Jenkins, like those guys. Somewhat limited athletically, but good players, you know. And I shouldn't say athletically. Malcolm Jenkins can run. Rodney McLeod, I think, is more of an instinct smarts guy back there.
Yeah.
The question I have, I guess, is with Jalen Mills. He's frustrating to watch at times. He makes plays, but he also gives up plays. And then, you know, Ronald Darby has been good at times as he's come back from injury. So I guess I give a slight edge if the pass rush isn't just killing the Vikings. I give a slight edge to Diggs and Thielen. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not really enamored with those Eagles corners either. I think there's definitely some speed deficiencies that can be exposed. I'd actually be interested to see if maybe we'll see a little bit potentially of Malcolm Jenkins on Adam Thielen in the slot, because I know they use him that way sometimes. Patrick Robinson, the primary nickel corner, but they do a little bit of that. So, and then Kyle Rudolph, of course, too. I do like the Eagles' safeties, but I worry a little bit about the corners, and Rudolph could certainly be a factor. He has been most of the season in this one, too. So, you know, I on the other side, I just think the middle of the field is where the Eagles got to do work, because Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes, I just don't think it's going to be happening all that much outside with Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith. So, I don't know. I expect both of these games, Eric, to be competitive. I certainly hope that's the case for conference title weekend. It should be. But let's who do you see playing in the Super Bowl in a couple weeks in Minnesota? I know you'll be there. Who do you anticipate interviewing and catching up with in the week in Minneapolis?
Well, obviously the Vikings story angle would be fantastic, and it would kind of dominate the week, I think. And that's even if Tom Brady and the Patriots make it. Those are my picks. I'm going chalk here. I'm kind of going with the predictable choices. I think both will be low-scoring games. I think both games will be grinds. I really don't see, you know, any kind of offensive explosion in either one. A couple of flash plays here and there, but really the defenses, I think, will be the talk. And if we do go to Minnesota and it's, you know, Brady going for glory in a sixth title, and the Patriots going, you know, raising their flag even higher versus a Vikings team that has been resilient, fun to watch. They're going to be the home team, the sentimental favorites. You know, even if they're not favored in Vegas, I don't know. But that's fantastic theater right there if it plays out like that. I mean, I would be fine with an Eagles-Jaguars Super Bowl. Don't get me wrong. I don't have a rooting interest. I just think that, you know, the Vikings-Patriots thing would be pretty darn interesting.
Yeah, that makes two of us. I'm going chalk, too. And man, would it be something if the Patriots got by this Jaguars defense and then had another test in 2 weeks against Minnesota, maybe the two best in football defensively. That would be something. And there's no flukes left. I think that's what's nice about this. Some people may look at the quarterbacks and say, well, this is a fluky thing, but then they're not looking close enough, because these are all really good football teams and have earned everything they've gotten to this point. But, yeah, I anticipate two close games, and the Patriots and the Vikings score squaring off a couple weeks from now. It should be a lot of fun to watch. Eric, we went a little long on the Pro Football Weekly podcast today, but that's because there's a lot to get to. And before we send the listeners off, let's just take two, 3 minutes, and we'll be down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl next week. I know we're both really excited about it. I know there's going to be a lot of quarterback intrigue, certainly with guys like Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, who I guess is going to be the first pick in the draft of the Browns. At least that's what Mel Kiper says, and a lot of other analysts are honing in on too. But what are you most interested in seeing in Mobile just in a minute or two that we can kind of get people primed for as we make our way down there next week?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I'm starting to write my preview, there's going to be 110 players down there, but you can't tell me that Allen and Mayfield won't be the show. You know, they'll be the big headlines. Everyone's going to be talking about these guys, assuming they stay in the game. We've already had, you know, Mason Rudolph bow out. We've had other good players like Rashawn Evans, the Alabama linebacker, Maurice Hurst, the big interior defensive lineman for the Michigan Wolverines. Good players. I think both could be first-round picks. They too have bowed out. There will be others. There will be injuries. So, you know, keep that in mind if you hear a name or two that won't be there. But yeah, this is a pretty interesting little group of running backs too. I don't know if there's anyone special in the group, especially with such a deep draft this year. You know, maybe the offensive line talent is not exceptional, but there's some good players there as well. Defensively, I think most of the talent. I have to go back and look a little bit more. There's some really intriguing defensive guys like Marcus Davenport from Texas San Antonio, I think has first-round ability for people I talk to who've seen him up close. So, you know, it looks like a pretty good year, but there's no doubt that Mayfield, the Heisman Trophy winner, and then Allen, kind of the mystery man, you know, the ultimately skilled, but no question there's a lot of holes in his game. How high will he go, and what can he do in a week's worth of practice that may open some eyes?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. We can't wait to get down there. My understanding is there's going to be a lot of interesting receivers, too. We're still trying to kind of work on the guys that we'll be honing in on. But Greg Gabriel, our draft expert, says there's going to be a lot of interesting early to mid-round wide receiver targets in Mobile that he's excited about learning more on. Obviously, Shaquille Griffin's brother is going to be a great story. Yes. Out of Florida, had his hand amputated and has been one of the more productive linebackers in the NFL over the past couple seasons, or in college over the past couple years. But it'll be interesting to see how teams sort of view him or his fit at the next level. So there's going to be a lot of fun stuff to get to, you guys. And don't worry, we are going to bring you a podcast. I know you're so worried. We're going to bring you a podcast from Mobile next week and kind of keep this thing going. And that'll do it for this week's episode of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. And one more thank you to our awesome producer, Dan Mott. We'll be sending him the file shortly. Thank you to Eric for joining me today. Thank you, the listeners, and we hope you enjoy conference title weekend. We'll be back with you broadcasting from Mobile, Alabama next week.